This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Pakistan's military ruler reneges on promises of a return to democracy and declares a state of emergency just as his country's Supreme Court was set to issue a decision on the legality of his re-election. The Supreme Court is purged, independent media shut down, political opponents, lawyers, and activists rounded up. Should the U.S. cut off billions of dollars in annual aid? Pakistan, in general, and General Musharraf in particular, are American allies of long standing in a part of the world where U.S. allies are hard to find. They've supported the war on terror ever since 9/11. It would be extremely difficult to continue the war in Afghanistan without Pakistan's active help. Do you cut off aid to Pakistan if it risks defeat in Afghanistan? And Afghanistan's Taliban survives in no small part because it enjoys the support of at least some parts of Pakistan's military and intelligence forces. And Pakistan likely plays host, however reluctantly, to Osama bin Laden and the al-Qaeda leadership. And Pakistan is a nuclear weapons state. Do you cut off aid? Later in the program, Gary Wills argues that religion plays no part in the debate over abortion. If you want to challenge that or ask him why, the email address is talk@npr.org. But first, the Pakistan paradox: democracy, dictatorship, stability, uncertainty, counterterrorism, human rights, American ideals, practical realities. Do you cut off aid? Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Peter Bergen is a terrorism analyst and author of two books on Osama bin Laden, also a senior fellow at the New America Foundation here in Washington. Today he joins us from the studios of the BBC in Oxford in England. Peter, always nice to have you on the program.
Neil, nice to hear you.
And it must be counted as a setback to U.S. foreign policy that Musharraf has made the decision to impose emergency rule.
No doubt. But unfortunately, Musharraf has had a history of overreaching in the past, whether it was putting the fix in elections in 2002 that marginalized the secular parties and had the unintended consequence of the Islamist parties doing the best that they've done in Pakistani history, or whether it was being in charge of the ill-fated Kargil operation before he became president, the incursion into Indian-held Kashmir, which was basically a defeat for the Pakistani military and its allies and the Pakistani militant groups. And again, of course, now with this declaring emergency law, because Musharraf himself is now the least popular politician in Pakistan. He was before this declaration of emergency measures, and I think it will do him in even more politically. He's got a messiah complex. Anybody who's had to read his autobiography in The Line of Fire realizes that he views himself as the true savior of Pakistan, and unfortunately, he is going out on a huge limb here, just as really it seemed that a return to real civilian rule was a real possibility, Neil.
Yes. At the same time, a lot of people argue the United States has little choice but to support him, even as we see pictures on TV of lawyers being rounded up and dissidents, even as this immensely unpopular man makes an immensely unpopular decision.
Yeah, but we've been doubling down on Musharraf for a long time. And I mean, I think, Neil, you may well be right that it's that, partly a victim of our own creation in the sense that, we have got along with Musharraf for so long that, we've sort of boxed ourselves in with very few options. A few years back, it would have been good. After all, the Bush administration's stated policy around the Middle East and to deal with Islamist terrorists is a policy of democratization. Pakistan, of course, is not only the second largest Muslim country, it's also the second largest Muslim democracy, or it should be, and it has been. And the administration has been strangely reluctant until the last 48 hours to actually say anything really concrete that criticizes Musharraf's efforts to gather more power. Now, of course, he's turning himself into General Zia Light, General Zia being the former military dictator of Pakistan. Musharraf had the chance to be a sort of second Jinnah. Jinnah, of course, the founder of Pakistan, the guy who, a secular person who set up the Pakistani state. Musharraf could have had the possibility to have become a second Jinnah and manage a really successful transition to civilian rule. He's chosen the path of being a General Zia Mark II. It is very unfortunate for all concerned.
Yet, what does the U.S. do now? As you say, they may be boxed in.
Well, I don't know. I mean, and frankly, I'm sure that most of the people involved don't know. Musharraf doesn't know how this is going to play out. Benazir Bhutto doesn't know how it's going to play out. The United States doesn't know how it's going to play out. They must be dimly aware that their previous policy of mollycoddling Musharraf has been a total disaster. You may recall the visit that Musharraf had to Washington back in September of last year, in which President Bush said, you know, this is the right guy, his policy of peace agreements in the tribal areas is going to help us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I looked deep into his soul and found he was the right person. Of course, that turned out to be wrong.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Daniel Markey, a senior fellow on India, Pakistan, and South Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations, former State Department official in the Bush administration. He's with us today from the BBC here in Washington. Nice to have you on the program as well.
Great to be here. Thanks.
And is there any choice but to support General Musharraf?
I think in the immediate term, the answer is no. There is no choice. Any step that would be taken by Washington or by London or the international community writ large to step away from Musharraf could potentially bring much more dangerous immediate consequences than anybody's willing to stomach. So in the immediate term, the answer is no. I think as we look further out, this step has certainly opened up potential that Washington will come down harder on Musharraf than it has in the past. But I think that's something that we'll see in the next weeks or months to come.
But in the short term, no alternative, which seems to leave him an infinite scope to do whatever he wishes to do.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I think that there are some red lines that he could cross in terms of levels of violence that he would perpetrate against his own people that would probably turn his own army against him, that would probably undermine his position within Pakistan and then open fissures that then Washington would be forced to confront and accept and deal with. So I think there are limits to how far he can go. And I think the best news that we've heard so far is that there may be a light at the end of the tunnel, that there may be a timeline for elections and a return to the process of democratic opening that we were all hoping to see in the coming months.
That was General Musharraf saying today that the scheduled elections may go ahead on schedule, though he said that before. We're not quite sure what that means. In any case, I wanted to ask you, Daniel Markey, the United States has spent many billions of dollars over the years, specifically during Musharraf's rule and has supported him, as we've said, to the hilt. Yet it seems as if it's gotten very little return on its money.
Yeah, I think that it's important not to underestimate the extent to which we have had a return on our investment. But I think it's pretty clear from Washington's perspective that we obviously would have liked to see more. And by what I mean about not underestimating it, there have been some steps that Musharraf has taken that have been really tremendous from a Pakistani point of view, specifically his relationship with India, turning off the militancy that was basically crossing the border into India and imposing a high degree of instability on that border. That's very significant. And the steps that he's taken against al-Qaeda, I think the consensus view in Washington is that they have been significant. But the billions of dollars that are being spent, clearly everybody believes that we should be getting more, and we're hoping to get more in the future.
Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this discussion. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guests are Peter Bergen, a senior fellow with the New America Foundation, and Daniel Markey, now with the formerly with the Bush administration, State Department on South Asia portfolio, and now a senior fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations. Let's see if we can get started. This will be Faraz from Cherry Hill in New Jersey.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
What I would like to say that it would be a very foolish mistake at this time to cut off aid or anything. See, Musharraf have a very clear vision for the country. If somebody studies what he's been doing for the country, I mean, he's not your average dictator. He opened up Pakistani media the way it was never opened up before. The press was totally free. Now, for the past few months, he saw his vision being so threatened that he had to take this action. And I think time will tell that this man has changed the country for the better. And I think, and with all due respect, all the people who are asking all the aid, what did have get us? We should have gotten more return. Please ask that question to the mothers of all these soldiers who died fighting that battle. Ask them if you should have gotten more.
Faraz, with due respect, better than your average dictator is hardly swaddling in the glow of history. But let me ask Daniel Markey about your point General Musharraf, despite his current unpopularity, every one of Pakistan's presidents by the time they leave office are pretty unpopular, if memory serves. Nevertheless, that he has been good for his country and the United States should not even think twice about cutting off aid.
Well, I think it's an important point to put him in the context of the other Pakistani leaders that we've seen to date, rather than judging him against some unattainable ideal. Still, the steps that he's taken, including the freedom of the media, have clearly been rolled back by this emergency rule. So if we stay within the confines of martial law for any extended period of time, I think this caller's point, we may actually get to the point where Musharraf is undermining his own achievements by having taken this step, and that would be truly unfortunate. If we look at the balance, he has done a lot for his country in terms of, as I mentioned, the relationship with India. I think most people would point to the macroeconomic successes that Pakistan has enjoyed, and I think that they would also point to sort of the strong leadership that he's exhibited. At the same time, the level of internal violence in Pakistan, coming from militants and extremists, this is unprecedented in Pakistani history. They are facing a clear crisis, and some of that, at least, is Musharraf's party and his own making.
A brief comment, if you would, Faraz.
Yes, I want to say all the militancy and what's happening in the city of Swat in past few months or so. At this time, it's a very crucial time that he needs to have his hands strengthened, not weakened by cut off the aid or anything. He will deal with if somebody cut off the aid, but at this time, he needs to have his hands strengthened.
Fawaz, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate that. I should just point out the city of Swat is a city in northwestern Pakistan that was recently taken over in all but name by Muslim extremists. Daniel Markey, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Daniel Markey, a senior fellow on India, Pakistan, and South Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations, formerly with the State Department at the Bush administration with South Asia portfolio, with us today from the BBC studios here in Washington. More with Peter Bergen and more of your calls as we address the Pakistan paradox. Should the United States cut off aid after a military dictator strangles off democracy? I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. President Bush meets today with Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan here in Washington. We also expect him to make a statement this afternoon on the situation in Pakistan. We'll keep you apprised if we get any more details on that. Earlier today, White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said the best option is for Pakistan to get back on its path to democracy. How far, though, is the United States willing to go to make that happen? Should the U.S. cut off $1 billion in aid? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Our guest is Peter Bergen. He's a senior fellow at the New America Foundation in Washington, D.C., and author of The Osama Bin Laden I Know, An Oral History of Al-Qaeda's Leader. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Radwan. Radwan is with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call, Neil.
Go ahead, please.
I think that, yes, we should cut off aid. The move by President Musharraf flies directly in the face of this administration's stated goal of the spread of democracy and fuels any sort of militancy that may exist. You know, they'll be able to hold him up and say, hey, here's a guy who's unliked by us. He's a dictator. He's thrown out democracy. And where does the U.S. stand? It supports him. So, sure, there are some short-term goals that might be best suited by sticking with them, but in the long arc of history, I think it's going to be viewed quite like our support of the Shah in Iran several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, there has to come a point where we substitute short-term goals with long-term vision, and I think this would be a significant hypocrisy on the part of this administration to say, yes, we support Pervez Musharraf, despite his complete undermining of democratic process.
And Peter Bergen, Radwan is right. This administration in particular has advocated democracy.
Yeah, I mean, that's been their overall strategy. And, you know, as I mentioned, this is the second largest Muslim country, which happens to be the second largest Muslim democracy when there isn't a military ruler in place. And Pakistan has been ill-served by its four military dictators. I mean, we've run a controlled experiment with, on one side of the border, Pakistan, on the other side, India, both of which received independence from the British in six decades ago. India has been really quite a remarkable success in the last 10 years. Why is it that Pakistan is not being a success? Surely this has something to do with the constant reversion to military rule, the stunting of the real growth of civil society. And Musharraf, by overreaching with this emergency measure, actually may have done democratization, the growth of civil society in Pakistan, quite a lot of good, because you may remember, Neil, the protests that followed the first crisis, constitutional crisis, when he suspended the Chief Justice back in the spring of this year, where you had, you know, tens of thousands of lawyers pouring out on the streets and hundreds of thousands of people joining the demonstrations. He may well prompt some of the same things. Now, of course, he's shut down all the independent media. He's arrested thousands and thousands of lawyers and activists in an effort to prevent this. But again, he may have overreached. And in the long term, a real rebellion within Pakistan of the civil society, the middle class, the intellectuals, maybe something like what we saw in the Philippines, where Marcos was really done in the Philippines more than two decades ago by the People's Power Movement there. Something similar could happen in Pakistan, Neil.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Radwan.
Thank you.
For another view, we're joined by Hassan Abbas. He's a former Pakistani government official who served in the administrations of both Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto and President Pervez Musharraf. He's now at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's with us from member station WBUR in Boston. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
And I know you advocate the United States should cut off financial aid to Pakistan immediately, despite what other interests the United States may have in the region.
Yes, it depends what is the message we want to give to Pakistan at this juncture. Musharraf has dismantled what little he had built. He was claiming to be an enlightened moderate, or he was saying, I support enlightened moderation, that he's a moderate leader. And what he has done is exactly opposite to that. Judiciary, human rights activists, media, all the progressive forces in the country, he has damaged all their rights. He has damaged their movement. And behind the scene, we have seen in Talibanization on the march in the Northwest Frontier Province, religious parties more strengthened. So I would say in this scenario, if United States really want to tell him about some of the bottom line things, revival of democracy, return to constitutional norms, I think the only way Musharraf would understand the message is by cutting off aid right now, at least telling him that United States would review this alignment, would review the aid package that was given to him. And in the process, when this is being reviewed, the aid is immediately cut off, at least the military aid.
And what if he says that's fine? And in the meantime, until we make that decision, no U.S. soldier, no piece of U.S. equipment, no piece of food, no bomb, no bullet will cross Pakistani territory on its way to Afghanistan.
Yes, I think what we have seen in the last 8 years, Musharraf had 8 years to really implement what he was saying all along, countering terrorism, countering militancy, and just see that rather than being countered, rather than being sidelined, those forces have strengthened in the Northwest Frontier Province. There have been 41 suicide bombings this year mm-hmm. in Pakistan alone. What all this means, the linkages between the local militant groups, some of your the other guests have mentioned that Musharraf clamped down on those militant groups. I have not seen any list of militants, well-known militants, whose parties are banned, whether they are in jail or whether they are under prosecution or whether Musharraf has done something significant. Those were just, they had gone under the ground, low profile. Those are the same militants which are now coming out, developing their linkages with Taliban, even with Al-Qaeda. So in this scenario, whether United States want to tell him that U.S. is so dependent on him, that all U.S. interests are of no value and Musharraf can just do whatever he wants. I mean, if we want to give that message, then U.S. can say, yes, we regret you have done this, but we understand. And the other option is to tell him that, yes, we appreciate what you have done so far in certain areas. We have been supporting you all along. You have made certain commitments to the people of Pakistan, to United States, to the international community, which primarily was that he would go by the schedule of elections. So,
yes.
I mean, These are the two options.
Mm-hmm. Yet Peter Bergen, though you can certainly question his dedication to the war on terrorism, certainly against the Taliban, if not against al-Qaeda, nevertheless, that is a real threat. He could cut off U.S. supplies to Afghanistan.
Well, I'm not sure how big a deal that would be. I mean, we've got one of the biggest U.S. Air Force bases outside the United States is in Bagram Air Force Base, can handle vast amounts of material coming in. They're also...
Are they going to fly over Pakistan or are they going to fly over Iran?
Well, presumably they wouldn't fly over Uzbekistan either now.
Got to look at a map there.
Well, I mean, they could fly over Tajikistan, which after all is somewhere that we deal with. So what I'm saying is there would maybe be a problem. I'm not sure it would be an insurmountable problem. And, you know, to in a sense, agreeing with Hassan Abbas, over time, the $11 billion that we've given the Pakistani military and Musharraf's regime, we're getting a lower and lower return on investment. If you look back to the high leaders of al-Qaeda who were arrested in Pakistan, it was all 2003, 2004. Since then, there hasn't really been much activity on that front. And in terms of dealing with the Taliban, there's been inactivity for years and years and years. And I was in Afghanistan recently, and a senior U.S. military officer said something that really astonished me, something he'd said 6 months before, which is, you know, we sometimes know where Mullah Omar, the leader of the Taliban, lives. He lives in Quetta, which is a major city in southwestern Pakistan. And the Pakistani military's proven either unwilling or unable to go after this. Now, of course, a lot of this blowing back on them, as Hassan mentioned, the 41 suicide attacks in Pakistan since the beginning of the year, a great deal of militant activity in the Northwest Frontier province. So what used to be predominantly a problem that was a Pakistani export is now blowing back on the Pakistanis themselves. Again, the silver lining in this particular cloud is that Pakistan may, whether Musharraf's in charge or not, or however this plays out, may for entirely domestic political reasons finally get a grip on both the Taliban problem and the al-Qaeda problem in their own country, because it's blowing up on their own doorstep to such a high degree now, Neil.
Mm. Let's get Tariq on the line. Tariq calling us from St. Charles in Illinois.
I see the problem is mainly the United States policy, which is always the same. They say we are supporting democracy, but they end up supporting dictators. These dictators will kill all kind of opposition in their countries, and the only way for other groups like the militant is to go underground, and these are the people are willing to pay the price for their freedom. So you go, so this is what happened. They go to the extremists, and eventually the United States always loses. Instead of sending military aid to these countries, they were supposed to send humanitarian services. Instead of sending tanks, they should send the tractors to help farmers and all kinds of good things, instead of going only to military help to these dictators.
Hassan Abbas, a lot of that military, the assistance from the United States to Pakistan has been in the form of F-16 fighters and the like, the point Tariq makes.
Exactly. I mean, as a former law enforcement officer in Pakistan and having served in the Northwest Frontier Province, I can tell you when I talk to my colleagues there now, the police forces, the law enforcement, even some of the civilian intelligence outfits, they have not received any aid. I repeat, and I'm saying it based on some what I have heard, not any support in terms of equipment, in terms of training. All the aid, the military aid that went into, was taken over by the military in the name of counterterrorism. So we are back to the situation where army remains the only organized, well-equipped, resourceful institution. And all the other civilian law enforcement agencies, which can really do a lot of work in that area by talking to the elders, by getting intelligence on the ground, by engaging people, those forces have not received anything. We just heard about, in the last couple of months, heard about $750 million aid for development work in tribal areas. Why it took us 7 years to understand and realize that actually it will be the civilian component, the component of development, engagement, some progress, education sector, health sector, that would really work. And this money is now still in the pipeline. So out of the $10 or $12 billion, very little went to those forces of moderation or those forces of progress, which could have really made a difference on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Tariq.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Peter Bergen, I guess people should not forget that the United States was very visibly involved, though, in the attempts to recover from the terrible earthquake there a couple of years ago.
And actually, that had a very salutary effect on Pakistan's view of the United States. It didn't last for a great deal of time, but there was quite a sharp bump in favorable views of the United States amongst Pakistanis because of the U.S. military help with the earthquake in Kashmir. Now, of course, there's still a lot of anti-American feeling. The Musharraf may be the least popular politician in Pakistan, but his numbers are doing much better. President Bush is scoring a 9% in Pakistan, so effectively zero in terms of favorability rating.
Peter Bergen of the New America Foundation with us today from BBC Studios in Oxford, England. Also with us, Hassan Abbas, who's a research fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He's with us from WBUR, a member station in Boston. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Chuck. Chuck in San Francisco.
Thanks very much. I was wondering if there's some way to come up with a formula where the quantity of aid is proportional to the amount of cooperation we have in a number of different areas, so that we have some aid because there's cooperation, for example, in counterterror, or some aid for disaster relief, but some aid that is not provided, the amount is reduced because of lack of political progress. So not to make it an all-or-nothing thing, but have it be the amount be determined by a set of different interests.
Mm-hmm. Concrete objective measurements. Peter Bergen, is that a prospect?
Well, I don't know if it's a prospect, but it sounds like an excellent idea. I mean, I think Hassan would have a better sense if that would fly politically in Pakistan or not.
Might be considered humiliating, wouldn't you think, Hassan?
No, I would think that is the only way that there can be some feedback, there can be some criterion on which aid is given. For instance, if United States want to really reach out to the ordinary people, and so US had to say that we are giving 20 or 30% for education, we are giving 40%, for instance, for development in the areas where there is religious extremism, and then there is this military component, and to really see whether the fighter aircrafts and nuclear submarines or things, big military hardware, is having an impact, and then review that on a yearly basis. If there is a decision that a certain amount of aid, even if it is little, is specifically going for education sector, for health sector, for people, development area, I think there will be a positive feedback from the ordinary people. The problem is we were too focused on just the goodwill of one man. We have not talked to the ordinary people in Pakistan, nor we have seen what their aspirations and dreams are.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we get one last caller on. By the way, thanks, Chuck, for the call. And let's go to Assad. Assad with us from Lakewood in Ohio.
Hi.
Like
everything I hear, I just have more and more comments I want to say.
Well, you've got less and less time in which to say them.
Right. I tend to question this. I mean, Musharraf really seldom comes across as a dictator in the classic sense. I mean, we still have the assemblies. There's a lot of things he's wanted to do that he's not been able to do just because of simple political opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I find just this definition of him as a military strongman is kind of difficult.
You can define it pretty easily by a few other characterizations, but go ahead.
Right. And the other thing is that as far as aid goes, as far as I recall, there was a lot of attempts made, for instance, to increase garment exports from Pakistan to the U.S., but for some reason, the only aid that was agreed to remained mainly as military hardware. And as far as I'm concerned, certainly compared to no other leaders really have come up in the interim, and compared to the other leaders that are there, for me, I think Musharraf still remains the best bet for Pakistan to sort of go forward.
And Peter Bergen, let me put this finally to you. The person heading the government of Pakistan may not be the person of the United States' choice, or he did not get there the way the United States might have preferred. Nevertheless, does the United States have any choice but to deal with him?
Well, I think the bigger principles of return to civilian rule, Neil. I mean, we as Hassan said, we put too many eggs in the Musharraf basket. It's blown up pretty nastily right now. Let's not make the mistake all over again. We should have been distancing ourselves from this guy many years ago. He has done some good things. The economy grew by 7% in the last couple of years. And the open media is a good thing. Of course, he's closed that down now. But you have to balance that out with the fact that he may not have been a typical military dictator, but he's certainly acting like one right now.
Peter Bergen, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peter Bergen, his most recent book is The Osama Bin Laden I Know, An Oral History of Al-Qaeda's Leader. He's a senior fellow at the New America Foundation here in Washington, D.C. Our thanks as well to Hassan Abbas. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Hassan Abbas, a research fellow at the Belfer Center's Project on Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, with us today from WBUR in Boston. When we come back, Gary Wills will join us on the opinion page this week to argue that abortion is not a religious issue. If you'd like to take issue with that, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or send us an email, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.